and she had plans to make. But something about this signal intrigued her.
"Determine the exact origin of this signal on a planetary map," she told the Pila. "Include locations of all known landfalls by enemy ships."
"There would be dozens by now, and the positions very vague," the pill statistician barked. Its voice was high and sharp, its mouth popped open for each syllable, and hairy cilia waved above its small black eyes. Pratt did not dignify it with a look.
"When the Sorrow intervened to end Pelan indenture to the Kisa," she hissed, "it was not to make you grand elders. Am I to be questioned like a human who pampers his chimpanzee?"
Talabera shivered and bowed quickly. The stocky Pila scuttled away to its data center. Crack purred happily. Yes, the Pila were so close to perfect. Arrogant and domineering with their own clients and neighbors, they scurried to serve the Sorrow's every whim. How wonderful it was to be a grand elder. She owed the humans something at that. In a few centuries, they had almost replaced the Timbrimi as the boogeymen to use on recalcitrant clients. They symbolized all that was wrong with uplift liberalism. When terror was finally humbled and humans were adopted into a proper client status, some other bad example would have to serve instead. Kratt opened a private communication line. The display lit up with the image of the Sorrow Prittle, the young commander of one of the ships in her flotilla.
"Yes, Fleet Mother," Prittle
bowed slowly and shallowly.
"I listen."
Kratt's tongues flickered at the young female's insolence.
"Ship number 16 was slow in the last skirmish, Prittle." "One opinion."
Prittle examined her mating claw. She cleaned it in front of the screen, an indelicacy designed to show indifference. Younger females seldom understood that a real insult should be subtle and require time for the victim to discover it. Kratt decided she would teach Prittle this lesson.
"You need a rest for repairs. In the next battle, ship number 16 would be next to useless. There is, however, a way in which she might win honor, and perhaps the prey as well."
Prittle looked up, her interest piqued.
"Yes, Fleet Mother? We have picked up a call that pretends to be one thing, perhaps an enemy pleading for succor. I suspect it may be something else."
The flavor of intrigue obviously tempted Prittle.
"I choose to listen, Group Mother."
Kratt sighed at the predictability. She knew the younger captains secretly believed all the legends about Kratt's hunches. She had known Prittle would come around. "You have much yet to learn," she thought, "before you will pull me down and take my place, Prittle. Many learning scars shall mar that young hide first. I will enjoy teaching you until that day, my daughter." Jillian and McKinney looked up as Takata Jim and Dr. Ignacio Metz entered sickbay, accompanied by three stocky, war-harnessed, hard-faced Xenos. They squealed indecipherable indignation and moved to interpose himself. McKinney's assistants chittered behind the ship's surgeon. Jillian met McKinney's eye. It had come, the confrontation. Now they would see if McKinney was only imagining things. Jillian still held out a hope that Takata Jim and Metz had compelling reasons for their actions, and that Krydike's injury was truly an accident. McKinney had already made up her mind. Aki, the young midship Finn from Calathea, had still not returned. The doctor glared at Takata Jim as she would look at a tiger shark. The expression on the male dolphin's face did little to belie the image. Jillian had a secret weapon, but she had sworn never to use it except in the direst emergency. "Let them act first," she thought. "Let them show their cards before we pull that last ace of trumps. The first stages might be a little dangerous, She had only had time to make a brief call to the NIST machine from her office before hurrying to sickbay. Her position here might be difficult if she had miscalculated the degree of atavism loose on Streaker. Maybe she should have kept Kipiru by her side.
Dr. Baskin!
Ignacio Metz didn't swim very close before grabbing a wall rail and letting an armed Stenos pass before him.
It's good to see you again, but why didn't you announce yourself?
A gross violation of security rules, Doctor, Takata Jim added. So that's the way of it, Jillian thought. And they might try to make that stick long enough to get me into a cell.
Why, I came for the ship's council meeting, Gentle Finn and Mel. I got a message from Dr. McEnany calling me back for it. Sorry if your bridge crew fouled up my reply. I hear they're mostly new and inexperienced up there.
Takata Jim frowned. It was even possible she had sent such a call, which had been lost in the confusion on the bridge.
McEnany's message was also against orders, and your return was contrary to my specific instructions.
Jillian put on an expression of bewilderment.
Wasn't she simply passing on your call for a ship's council? The rules are clear. You must call a meeting within 24 hours of the death or disability of the captain.
Preparations were underway, but in an emergency, the acting captain can dispense with the advice of the council. When faced with clear disobedience of orders, I am within rights to... Jillian tensed herself. Her preparations would do no good if Takata Jim were irrational. She might have to make a break by vaulting over the row of auto docks to the parapet above. Her office would be steps away.
To order that you be detained for a hearing to be held at some time after the emergency.
Jillian took in the stances of the guard fen. Would they really be willing to harm a human being? She read their expressions and decided they just might be. Her mouth felt dry, but she didn't let it show.
You misread your legal status, Lieutenant, she replied carefully. I think very few of the Fen aboard would be surprised to learn that...
The words stopped in her throat. Jillian felt a chill in her spine as the air itself seemed to waver and throb around her. Then, as she grabbed a rail for support, a deep growling sound began to emanate from inside her head. The others stared at her, confused by her behavior. Then they began to feel it, too.
Takata Jim whirled and shouted, "Fire weapon! McEnany, give me a link to the bridge. We are under attack!"
The dolphin physician moved aside, amazed by Takata Jim's quickness as he rushed past. Jillian pressed her hands over her ears and saw Metz doing the same as the grating noise grew louder. The security guards were in disarray, fluting disconsolately with boat-like pupils wide in fear.
Should I make my break now?
Jillian tried to think. But if this is an attack, we'll have to drop our quarrels and join forces.
Incompetence! Takata Jim shouted at the comm. What do you mean, only 1,000 miles away? Pinpoint it! Why won't the active sensors work?
Wait!
Jillian cried. She clapped her hands together. Through a haze of building emotion, she started to laugh. Takata Jim continued to bark rapidly at the bridge crew, but everyone else turned to look at her in surprise. Jillian laughed. She slapped the water, pounded on the nearest auto dock, grabbed Watasetti around the dolphin's quivering flank. Even Takata Jim stopped then, captivated by her apparently psychotic fit of joy. He stared, oblivious to frantic twitters from the bridge.
Tom! She cried out loud. I told you you couldn't die! Damn it, I love you, you son of a... Oh, if I had gone, I would have been home by now.
The Finns stared at her, eyes opening still wider, as they began to realize what she was talking about.
She laughed, tears running down her face.